first topic to be discussed is operating segments. And who do I?
I'm gonna start off. It's a joint session, right. But I'll start off. So good morning again, everybody. So in this education session, we're going to be discussing segment reporting. There's four papers, as you'll see. Firstly, a joint board cover paper. That's paper 27, and we're going to discuss that momentarily. Then there's one paper from the ISB, and that's paper 27A, and we'll discuss that next. And then there's two papers from the FASB, one of which is a summary presentation, and these are papers 27B and 27C. So I'm just going to move on now to introduce that the topic is covered more fully in paper 27. So the standards of the two boards being IFRS 8 and Accounting Standards Codification Topic 280 are substantially converged, and a core principle underlying both standards is a management approach. Both boards have completed a post-implementation review, or a PIR, since the issuance of their respective standards on segments. In response to the findings of the PIR, the ISB considered targeted improvements to IFRS 8 and issued an exposure draft in 2017. Having evaluated the feedback to the exposure draft, the ISB decided not to proceed with the proposals originally put out in the exposure draft. The FASB decided not to take action as a result of its PIR, and Lauren, afterwards, let me know if I speak out of turn on this one. But, however, following a 2016 agenda consultation with the FASB, a project was added to its agenda. The project is in its early stages on specific aspects of the U.S. standard on stat segments, and the FASB staff will talk about the proposals later on in this session. And the objective of this session is really just to update the boards on the activities related to a converged standards. There are no recommendations for the boards to consider with respect to segment reporting. So, Lauren, I'll just see if you'd like to add anything to that. No? Okay. So I'm going to move on now to the ISB paper, which is paper 27A. So if you just refer to that, and I'll give a brief introduction, and then we ask one question. So the objective of this paper is to the FASB on the post-implementation review of IFRS 8 and a subsequent work arising from this project. The PIR of IFRS 8 concluded that overall IFRS 8 had achieved its objectives. The board concluded that no revision of the core principle of IFRS 8, being the management approach, was necessary, but identified particular areas for improvement. And as you'll see in the appendix to the paper, there's a tabular summary of the areas identified and a board's response. An exposure draft, as I mentioned earlier, was issued in 2017 that proposed particular amendments focusing on the areas identified for improvement. We received 76 comment letters in response to the exposure draft. In addition, the ISB staff obtained additional feedback from key stakeholders in order to provide an analysis of the feedback to the board and recommendations for consideration. The board discussed each of the proposed amendments, and ultimately the board decided that the proposals would not, when considered in aggregate, result in sufficient improvements in information to investors to justify the costs that stakeholders would incur if the board were to amend IFRS 8. In response to this decision, the ISB staff will publish a feedback statement incorporating the board's conclusion in the second half of 2018. So I'll now open this up to the FASB and also the ISB board members to see whether there's anything that needs clarification and whether there's any questions on our paper.
Marcia?
Yeah, I'll ask a question. When the ISB was considering the feedback and you received feedback indicating that the aggregation criteria, the economic characteristics could be difficult to apply, was there any consideration by the ISB to adjusting or impacting the aggregation criteria?
We did consider it. As you know, we've approached it differently to the way your staff are proposing. We propose to add in additional clarifications as to what those similar economic characteristics were. But after receiving a feedback, we found that stakeholders were saying just adding clarification wasn't enough, that something, a different approach would be needed. We did road test an approach similar to the FASB at the ASAF meeting at a later stage of the project, but at that point in time, we didn't receive positive feedback and the project was an advanced stage, so we decided not to move forward.
Yes. Yeah. So your observation about not meeting the cost benefit. I have two questions. First of all, a feedback statement, is that in essence similar to a basis for conclusion? So basically, you'll be describing your basis as to why you're not moving forward. Is that what a feedback statement is?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair to say. I mean, it was following the... I think you issued one subsequent to your PIR as well. You might call it something differently, but it's... Yeah, it's a summary of the feedback from the PIR.
Okay. And then, I don't remember the exact date, but your observations about the concern around aggregation and there not being a feasible, cost-effective solution... Sounds an awful lot like an exercise that the FASB staff did between 2006 and 2008, mm-hmm. where the FASB staff with and consultation board found the same information, and that was one of the reasons why I think we were trying to go down to this no aggregation criteria. So I think what you found is similar to what we found a number of years ago.
That's interesting.
Claire, there was a comment that struck me on paragraph 20. You talked about there wasn't sufficient overall improvement. And then when I looked back at it was paragraph 12, item 8. This is the investors in the PIR said that they didn't always understand the reconciliation between the amounts in the segments and the consolidated. And I know Lauren's going to later talk about some solutions that we're looking at there. I would have thought that item 8 alone would have been sufficient improvement. So could you help me understand what problem were you trying to solve with item 8, paragraph 12-8, and then the cost-benefit assessment you went with that?
Yeah. I can. I mean, there were 9 proposed amendments, and that was one of them. And we got mixed feedback on that particular proposal. What we did with the board was present a package of 9, and I think of the 9, there were 4 that individually were considered to be favourable, and 5 that were not, for the total of 9. And then the board considered it as a package whether it was worth opening up the IFRS 8 and amending it for the 4 that was left, including the investor information one, and the board determined that on a cost-benefit basis it wasn't. The other thing, and Nick may wish to add to this, was to some extent we found from the investor feedback, investors wanted a little more than what we'd actually included in the exposure draft, and I think what they want is something similar to what you're proposing, and that they want more line items. So the reconciliations was one thing, but what the investors were really saying to us was we want more line items, so we want depth versus breadth.
Okay, so it was really item 8, then there's really 2 problems. One is the information you're giving us, we don't get the connection, and we want connection there, and we want more connection. We want more information.
Exactly. Yeah. Is that fair comment, Nick?
I think that's fair, that this might be a part solution, but not the whole. And there's a danger of just going down the part route. And it is, I'd say there's a contrast between what we hear from our users is that there's much more focus on the number of line items and less concern about the number of segments. So that doesn't seem to be a piece of substantive feedback we hear from most users.
Nick, what do you think that is? What do you think we get?
I'm not sure, but people are obviously broadly content. Whether we find perhaps potentially there are less new businesses which are using a single segment approach, which may be an issue that you have with some of your preparers. But that's the feedback is simply yes, we're generally happy with the number of segments, but it's the line items.
Yes, Christine.
So to that point, along the way, have you collected data or are you aware of any data that indicates the average number of segments that companies are providing or what proportion of the population doesn't provide more than one, let's say?
We collected a limited amount of data as part of the staff's research, but that was not presented to the board. It was quite a challenging exercise to do through the data tools available, because what you find in tools like Capital IQ is they define a segment as a business segment as opposed to a reportable segment, an operating segment. But we did do a limited amount of research, and we did it under US GAAP, and we did it under IFRS. In some cases, but both under US GAAP and IFRS, one operating segment, one reportable segment. You know, Facebook was one example. And to some extent, that was understandable. You've got another company that's got 14 operating segments and 14 reportable segments. What would be interesting and might be interesting for your research is the information that's lacking right now from a disclosure perspective is how many operating segments there are and how many reportable segments, so there's transparency about how much aggregation there actually is.
So you don't have a sense the extent to which they actually are aggregating?
It's some voluntarily disclosed. You could see, I mean, it was a limited sample. You could see that it was, I would say, all over the place. For the ones who did disclose, some they had exactly the same, some they might have had a couple less, and then and many others, the majority didn't disclose.
Okay, thank you.
Dan?
To Christine's question, we also looked at the academic studies of IFRS reporters, and that's where we can see very few single segment entities. So I think it's something different in the environments and the countries compared to your situation.
Right. Then that may be why the users aren't calling for it, because there's not so much of that going on.
Yes.
Thank you.
Any more? No. Yeah. Mark?
Just on that point, I was trying to think why you might get different feedback, too, and I was just trying to think, like, it might be a situation where to say people are content with what they have today in the sense of the number of segments, but I guess every time they're analyzing segments, some investors say that they want more information within those segments, and at least I don't think that in the U.S. the problem is that everybody has too few segments. Only in smaller circumstances do you have it, So it's the case, in my mind, that in every case, investors will want more lines for the segments that are reported, and only in some cases they might want more segments to begin with, at least in the U.S.
Yeah. I want to follow up. So, Anne, you said the research that the academic research shows that under IFRS there are more reportable segments than under U.S. GAAP?
No. Rephrase that.
Okay.
What the IFRS research showed was that there wasn't a practice of companies having only one reportable segment. Christine had mentioned to me that in the US setting, there are many companies that present themselves and say, we have just one reportable segment. That wasn't something that we observed in the IFRS research. We observed that the majority of the companies that were examined had multiple segments.
So it wasn't a comparison of IFRS versus US GAAP.
Yes. Independent research seems to bear this out.
Yeah. But we want to be careful with that, you know, number. And I think we talked about this at one of our last board meetings. I think the statistic used was 70% of the public companies provided one or no segments. But when you look at that same population, something like 65-70% have sales less than 250 million in revenues. So, and I don't know what the overlap is, and I think the staff is trying to work on to understand that overlap, but I would suggest a significant portion of those that have one or no segments are really the smaller companies. And it's really that the numbers can be skewed by just size and significance. And in those cases, to Nick's point, I think in those cases, if I only had one segment or had no segment information, I would be definitely looking for more disaggregation of the income statement, more rows, if you will.
And you might see industry trends as well, like market cap industry trends, you know. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think what's interesting is I think logically the bigger companies are more likely to have more segments. So if you just look at larger companies, that 70% statistic is without a doubt going to be less. The question is how less. And I don't think we have any indication at this point. We don't have the data to say whether it's 80% of them giving segment disclosures or 60% or 40%, we just don't know at this point. So I'm actually in the process of trying to get that data.
Yes?
Could I just ask a follow-up to Hal's observation about if it's a one-segment company, that's when users would want more line items. If you think about it, if you're saying a reporting entity has only one segment, then all of the information in the financials would be about that one segment. So I'd imagine, I would have thought intuitively that there'd be less pressure for additional line items if you're one segment entity. Does that?
I wouldn't agree with that. I would think if I were following a company that produces some product and I had cost of goods sold and SG&A, those were my two rows, I would definitely want to know more about the cost of goods sold, easily, you know, split between labor and materials.
But that's more the disaggregation of minimum line items rather than line items in the segment note, because right. I just imagine that line items in the segment note wouldn't matter that much for a single segment entity.
Correct. And what I was saying is I would be pushing for more rows of information in the consolidated.
But in the consolidated financial
right.
statement.
I wouldn't be focused right. as much on the columns.
Okay. Shall we move on?
Yeah.
Presentation, yes.
Hi. Good morning, everyone. What I wanted to do is introduce paper 27B, and I think I'll sort of spend most of the time going through the slide deck. So if you have that at hand, we'll kind of be able to talk through each of the slides. The purpose of the session really is to update the ISB members a bit about our current active project on segments, explain a little bit about why the board set the scope as it has, and just to discuss some of the feedback that we've received as part of our initial deliberations. So just in terms of the deck, there's a sort of slide two sets out what I want to cover, a bit about the purpose and some of the concerns that we're going to go through. So really, on slide three, we view really the purpose of the project is that users have indicated that there's an insufficient number of segments and that they want more segments and they want more detail about those segments. And as we kind of structured, we really think that that main feedback point is driven from three particular aspects of the standard. Segment identification, the application, the aggregation criteria, and the disclosure requirements. So on the next slide, really, I'd probably say that that feedback isn't new. Those problems with or challenges with the standard aren't new to us. We've had a few projects over the years that have looked at this. Russ mentioned this at the beginning. In 2005, the FASB looked to provide guidance on what's meant by similar economic characteristics. And it did develop a little bit of a model for preparers to think through and how they evaluate that criteria. But in the end, the board realized that even by adding additional qualities or characteristics which to evaluate, preparers really wanted more guidance on how to perform the evaluation, not just what characteristics you're evaluating it against. So ultimately, the board didn't pursue that approach further. So with that lens on, at this juncture, at this project, we're not really looking to reiterate, just adding more characteristics. We're looking to do something perhaps a little bit different. The other data points here really are just to reflect the fact that we've had a few other consultations over the years. As Claire mentioned, we had the post-implementation review in 2012, and in 2016, the board also issued an agenda consultation. I guess probably the main point to say about that is that users really rated segment reporting as one of their highest priority projects, and that's where we got the feedback from, that they want more segments and more disclosures about those. Preparers acknowledged that some improvements could be made to the standard, particularly around aggregation, but they didn't really want us to reopen the fundamental nature of the standard or reopen the management approach. So with that, I think the board tried to strike a balance between the user feedback and what preparers were saying. So on slide five, this really sets out the current scope of our project. And when the board added it back in September of last year, it decided to have a narrow scope targeted improvement. That doesn't mean that the changes potentially wouldn't be significant. It just means that we're not reopening the fundamental principle. And the board directed the staff to really look at two alternatives. Either we look to remove the aggregation criteria, and therefore each operating segment would be a reportable segment up until a practical limit. Or the other option is that the board would reorder the current process, and we'll get a little bit more into that and what that would involve. And effectively, what that would do is move the size test that currently exists today in the literature earlier into the process. In terms of the other aspect of the standard, the board asked us to look at the segment disclosure requirements and really directed us to look at three things, whether or not we should add more pieces of information to the list of required segment disclosures. That's one option. The other option would be to require the current segment disclosures to be put into a table format in a single location that includes the reconciliations to really bridge the contextual information set that comes along with segment reporting. And the third is really that we would require a similar table, but require that to be reported on the basis of the financial statement format of the entity. So on slides 6, 7, and 8, we found it really helpful to actually articulate in this project what we are and aren't doing. And so we found this table, I've reused this a couple of times now, but it just really helps to articulate what is in and what's out of scope. Basically, we think there's sort of eight issues that we've grouped under three headings. Segment identification is obviously something that we said we're not going to reopen in this project. But we recognize that users find it incredibly frustrating that segments seem to change frequently and that they differ from entity to entity. Again, we think that's just a feature of the management approach, which we're not reopening in this project. The other thing that we find in the feedback is that the CODM perspective is at the level within the organization that you identify your segments from. And I think users can tend to find this frustrating because they think that segments should be identified at a lower level than what's currently required by the literature. We know that this is an area where there is a lot of regulatory effort, particularly in the United States. Again, we just acknowledge that it's a feature of the management approach and that we're not reopening that as part of this project. And the third issue, again, is that they just find that users find that they're just not satisfied that how management discusses its business in the MD&A doesn't necessarily match up to how it does its segments reporting. And we just acknowledge the fact that the MD&A section is written for a different purpose and a different intention than how you're required to apply the segment standard. So again, we just acknowledge this is a feature of the current literature. So now that I've told you what we're not taking on, what we are taking on, if you start from about slide 7 and 8, is really, I guess, the main part of this project. And I guess users have told us that they think that preparers are using the flexibility that's currently required today to minimize the number of segments, and they can use it to mask or for competitive harm concerns. And so that is something that we're looking at. That is part of the project. Again, on issue 5, we recognize that this is an area of heightened compliance concern in the United States and a lot of exchange back and forth between the regulators and preparers. So users actually feel that their judgment's a challenge. So we feel that this is an aspect that we can take a bit of cost out of the system by addressing this piece of the literature. Again, on slide 8, these are just some of the issues that are really dealing with what is the management approach and whether it is or isn't inside the scope. We know that users really want more disclosures, and we know from the post-implementation review that there's particular things that they want. We know that they want gross margin by segment. They would mind some cash flow information and some more asset information. So again, that's one of the reasons why we're thinking about adding some more segment disclosures. We also know that users find it frustrating that not all pieces of the segment requirements, the segment disclosures, are provided or reported in financial statements. We recognize that that is a feature of the CODM model, that if the CODM doesn't regularly review it, it's not required to be reported. And that's a massive frustration, and we recognize that on that users have, because they genuinely think that someone in the organization has to review this information. And we acknowledge that. That's just a feature of the management approach and the CODM perspective. We're just trying to be clear that that's not the piece of this literature that we're reopening in this project. And I guess lastly, I guess we recognize that sometimes you get oftentimes you'll see segment disclosures sort of peppered throughout the financial statement notes. You'll get a little bit in the revenue section, you'll get some in the goodwill note, and then you'll have some in just a general segment stuff, segment note. And what we're trying to do is connect up all of the segment information in a single location, bring in some of the reconciliations so it's a little bit more contextual and that it rolls up and it helps users see the connectivity into the consolidated totals. So that's actually something we are looking at in the scope of this project. I could pause there, or I can probably keep on going with the project, with what we're doing. All right, I'll carry on in terms of the next slide is slide 10. Really, our project team calls this the six easy steps of segment reporting. the standard doesn't call them steps, but really they act very much in that manner. And we just find it helpful to articulate this on a single slide, all of the different steps that exist today in the literature. So we're not coming up with size tests. I want to be very clear. We are not, we're not coming up with something new. This exists today in the current literature. So the first approach we're looking at in terms of the aggregation is really, if you view this as a six steps to get to what is your reportable segments, what we're really thinking about doing is moving the current step two to step one. So what that means is after an entity has identified its operating segments in accordance with the management approach, it would then apply the 10% test that exists today. We also were thinking that if we're going to reopen that part of the literature, we may as well see if we want to make some changes to the size tests, and maybe we'll want to add in some extra thresholds. But largely, that concept of size tests exists. That's there today. The other feature of this particular alternative is that we wouldn't really do anything else to change the other remaining steps. We would need to articulate what happens when a segment falls below the size test and how you may report information about that. But largely, we're not going to change any of the other step 4, 5, 6, or 7. That's not really what we're trying to do in this project. Ultimately, what we're thinking is that after you've identified your segments, then they're your big segments. They're over 10%. So you would no longer be able to aggregate those with any other segments. So the intention is, we think that this would result in more reportable segments. Of course, on slide 12, slide 13, pardon me, we recognize that by moving around the different steps, there are some consequential issues that we're aware of and that we started to evaluate. I talk a little bit about some of these in the actual memo. But while we're there, we want to reopen the questions for the board about, like, what should be the size tests, what should be the thresholds. We were thinking of maybe adding in some additional thresholds of research and development expense and capital expenditure, largely because those extra thresholds are not used today, and they are representative of resources that are allocated to a segment. So we think that the current thresholds may not quite capture those types of resource allocation decisions. So we think that maybe by including additional thresholds, we may be able to capture a few more reportable segments. And then, of course, there's a few other issues that we're alive to, that you could have more restatements that result of companies going above or below thresholds. So we know we have to think about some solutions to the restatements and the constant restatement requirements. And again, the process for what to do after the segments, for those segments that fall below the size test. So they're just some of the technical issues that we certainly have done our issue diagnostics on. And we recognize that there are some things we need to think about. In slide 14, really the other option the board directed the staff to think about is if the aggregation criteria itself is quite costly for preparers and users are concerned about the flexibility that's inherent in that, one option is just to remove it. And so this option really says if we take it away, we do need to at least have some practical limit so that there's a mechanism, a cutout mechanism, so segment reporting doesn't continue to go on and on. I guess our thinking here is that back when the standard was developed in 1997, the board was concerned that you could have too many segments, that that would not be useful for users, and that it would be very cumbersome to report. And we acknowledged the fact that it could be cumbersome if we don't have a limit. So we recognize that we need to have a practical limit, but we think that time has changed how users consume information. So we think that it's probably appropriate to reopen this discussion about whether or not consumption is going to be inhibited by giving you more segments. So that's just some of the things that we're thinking about in that option. Again, we in slide 15, we acknowledge that there are just some technical issues. We've done some issue diagnostics on this, and we recognize that there's a few things that we would need to get the board to consider, like what should be the practical limit. If we're going to reopen it, we need to say, is 10 the right number? Maybe it should be higher. Maybe it should be 15. We need to think about what that number should be. We need to think about what would be the basis of reporting out segments if you exceed the practical limit. And again, we're alive to the fact that you're going to have potentially a few more restatement options, a restatement of requirements if you exceed it. So we're just alive to some of those issues under that alternative.
Go ahead. Lauren, and I think I was just slow off the mark maybe when there's the previous any other questions, because this kind of goes back to the CODM and not reopening the CO, you know, the management approach. And as I've been thinking through some of the feedback, I've been wondering whether it's possible, and I guess I'm wondering if you thought about this at all, to look at the management approach as having two aspects. One is the idea that how do you look at your business in terms of, is it geography, is it product, is it distribution channels? You know, what is your basis for segmenting your company? And how do you measure internally for those purposes? Because, of course, you're not required to adjust your internal, as you do the reporting based on your internal reporting rather than, you know, the adjustments to, you know, in our case, IFRS standards. So that's the identification and measurement basis, but identification kind of big picture. And then the point that you were raising before about users being frustrated that somebody reviews the information, but the acid test is, does the CODM or not? Do you think it would be really a major step away from the management approach to say there's less emphasis on the CODM reviewing when it comes to how many segments? If you still were keeping the, we're not imposing a geographic matrix, we're not imposing a product matrix, we're not imposing recognition and measurement requirements, which seems to me to be the heart of the management approach, and that this seems to be, as you know, the, does the CODM review it or not, seems to be a source of a lot of frustration. I just didn't know if you thought any further. I hadn't thought about it that way until going through your paper, and you were saying, you know, focusing on that as a stress point.
I would say we have thought about maybe we need to have dual perspectives. So segment identification could be done at a CODM level, that the segment disclosure perspective could be done at a segment manager level. We have actually thought about that, but we recognized that that's just not where the board scoped the project. But we have actually thought about dual perspectives when you apply the standard. We have thought about that.
And just thought it was just a scope
increase. We think
increase.
It's a scope issue.
Okay. Doc?
Thank you. I think removing the aggregation criteria is an interesting idea because preparers do not have to follow the aggregation criteria. They just provide their information to public. But my question is about practical limit. Mm-hmm. Why do you keep the practical limit? I think it could create the opportunity for body management to mask some important information. And you are trying to address it in your paper. If you can look at your paper 2B, the page 17, you showed some example of table. And you gave us two options. One is revenue approach. One is accounting policy approach. And you denied accounting policy approach because it may create to mask very important segment. But even in the case of revenue approach, say, for example, if you are a retailer who has a large revenue in average, but one segment is providing only service, they do not have large revenue but a large amount of gross profit. Then if you follow just the ranking system only by revenue, then such a segment could be masked. So by having practical limitation, it would create opportunity to mask. So why do you still keep it?
I think we're just trying to recognize the board's original conclusion that if you don't have a limit, it just could be very cumbersome to report everything. We've done some scrubbing of SEC comment letters, and at the very extreme, and I want to catch, this is at an extreme level, we have seen entities that say that they have over 50 segments. So I want to be fair that is an extreme. That's an extreme level, but you have to have a cutout mechanism. Otherwise, you run out of space in your financial statements.
So
your paper financial.
Pardon me?
Your paper financial.
Yeah.
Lauren, thanks. I think these are really interesting, the ideas that you're exploring here on the aggregation front. But one question I had, and this might be a bit of an academic question, because if what we're dealing with is a situation where there's just very few reporting segments provided in practice, any disaggregation might be a good thing. But I think in theory, if I understand correctly, there's a bit of a trade-off with these different approaches between an approach which would tend to focus on making sure big operating segments are visible versus making sure that similar operating segments are visible. Because if you've got assuming you've got a threshold of 10 or whatever it is, which I think from a practical perspective would always probably think you would need some threshold, because even if investors can consume it, preparers will say it's burdensome and too much commercially sensitive information is visible, so there will always, I think, need to be a threshold, whether it's 10 or something else. In theory, if you go with an approach where, for example, if you remove the aggregation altogether, you had a number of big, similar segments disclosed, as a result, you may end up with more dissimilar segments that are smaller being aggregated together because you focused on size first and aggregation second. So do you have a sense yet whether investors prefer to definitely be able to see the big segments and are less concerned about potential aggregation of smaller, dissimilar segments as a consequence, or the reverse?
We don't know yet. I think that's a very helpful... We'll have to learn that as we go through this project. We don't know yet.
Because to me, at 30,000 feet would seem to be a potential trade-off, which assumes, of course, that you've got more than whatever the cutoff number of operating segments is to start with for the analysis. But in theory, that would sort of be...
Lauren, didn't you have somewhere in there that one of the things to consider about a segment is, does the company see that as a growth, growth opportunities in the future? Are they talking about that on conference calls? I don't recall exactly where that falls, but I mean that was some of the things that the staff was thinking about.
Right. I think if we include sorry, let me make sure I'm talking about the right alternative here, because I think I'm gonna get myself a bit muddled up. But if we keep the threshold model, then yes, Hal is saying, I want to connect that up to what you're saying. Yes, if we keep a threshold model of, is it assets, revenue, size, the inclusion of research and development or capital expenditure would capture those areas of potential future growth. That would be under that approach. That would be approach one that we mm-hmm. discussed in the slide deck. In terms of what I think you said, Sue, about whether or not the practical limit, you start chopping off large segments, like you're chopping it out. Yes, you're right. I think that's it's a feature of what would happen under that alternative.
Jung Woo.
Thank you. Lauren, you have just suggested a very interesting idea. On additional threshold base, you suggested research and development expenditures and capital expenditure. In your paragraph 49-50 of the paper B, so the purpose of this new basis for your size test is showing the segments of high growth and of low growth separate. That's your purpose for suggesting this new basis. Is it correct?
That's right. I mean, I think we don't know how to capture in a threshold model, in a threshold setting, we don't know how to capture those segments that are not yet, I'm not sure I have the right word, but are not yet have reached kind of business as normal. These are segments that are yet to come on stream and are yet to be seen as viable. And so we think that a lot of resources could be allocated to those, but they just have not hit viability stage yet. And so we think, well, the intention of those thresholds is that you'd capture those segments earlier.
So such kind of information of the high growth or low growth segments separately is coming from your investors or just from your some ideas internally?
I'm not going to say that investors have told us this specifically. I think in the mix of information, we're trying to reflect the feedback that users want to be able to forecast out, and the expectation is that the future segments, the future areas of growth are important for them. So that's, I think.
Yeah. I think one other aspect to think about, too, is when we went down the approach a long time ago of this notion of CODM and the management approach, in some instances, some would take the perspective that we're no longer at a pure management approach because of the aggregation. And so
right. The
second alternative helps to kind of get you back to, at least for a portion of segments, the pure management approach.
We're in the process of embarking on a field test. We're not going to cover many, many companies, but we're trying to get a representative sample of companies to test all these ideas to see how effective each of them are in achieving the goals of the project. If they are successful, then we'll move forward, I presume. If not, then maybe we change directions. Maybe we think more about the point Mary made earlier.
Anyway, very, very interesting idea. So after you have some kind of field study, you know, please let us know the result of this survey.
Thanks. Christine?
I just wanted to respond to Sue's comment about the user's needs and being different between the two approaches and just provide a maybe a little bit different perspective on that. If you view the gating question to the number of segments being the CODM and where that's applied, then changing the aggregation criteria, whether it's reshuffling the steps or eliminating the aggregation criteria altogether, is not likely to really move the needle in a significant way on the number of segments that are being provided. One, because there's reason to believe that some firms are already providing reportable segments equal to operating segments, so they're not applying the aggregation criteria at all. And for the ones that are, I think it's fairly uncommon that they are aggregating from greater than 10 down to a fewer number. So it would just shift it from maybe 4 to 5 or 4 to 6, that kind of thing. So I think for me, the question really becomes, how can we reduce cost the most? Because it's not really going to have a huge benefit in terms of changing the number of segments. So which of those approaches is going to reduce cost in the system the most? Because that's where we're probably going to get our bigger bang for buck. I did want to ask Neely, based on your experience at the SEC, what I just said about the extent to which that practical limit comes into play and that there are companies
using the aggregation criteria to reduce from more than 10 down. Is that a really common issue? Is that pervasive that they're doing that? In which case, what I'm saying is incorrect, and that's fine. Or is it more concentrated in certain industries? So is it unusual? Is it pervasive? Is it concentrated, I guess, would be my question.
So I'll just speak from my experience in a past life, and I would echo what Lauren had said earlier, that I think it's more around the edges that you'll see companies have more than the 10. I think for the vast, vast, vast majority of fact patterns that I've at least looked at, companies will have fewer than the 10. And it sort of makes sense because if you think about what you said about the gating question is the CODM, how many segment managers can a CODM realistically manage? There's a practical limit to what is humanly possible. For those around the fringes where I've seen more than the 10, it tends to be in things like the retail industry, or we've seen it with some sort of service types of companies like consultant companies, and then also with real estate, home builder types of companies as well. So I don't know if that's consistent with
that. Yeah, that's what we've found.
Yeah.
Okay, any more comments?
Do you want me to carry on?
Yes, please.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
So just for the remainder of the time today, we want to talk a little bit about the segment disclosures and that aspect of the project that we're looking to do some improvements on. On sort of slide 18, we sort of set out what do we think is the problem statement. And I guess as we sort of said at the top of this, users said that they want more segment disclosures, but we think that they want that information to be reported in a way that enhances the relationship with the consolidated information. And so with that in mind, with that lens in mind, we're really looking at three alternatives. One is that we could just simply require more pieces of segment information to be added to our list of the disclosures. The other piece, the second option, you could require it to be reported in a table, and there's sort of a couple of iterations of that. So in slide 19, we talk a little bit about what actually we would look to require. Again, we know that gross margin is a particular piece of information that users have told us on many occasions that they want this piece of information by segment. The understanding there is that there's just less allocations and there's less things that go into allocating or unallocating within a gross margin. So that piece, we recognize that users have wanted that for a long time. Certain asset balances, they would like a little bit more detail on, and certainly some cash flow information. But we would constrain it to the fact that you would only have to provide this information if it's regularly reviewed by the CODM. So that is consistent with the other segment information that's currently required today. We wouldn't look to pierce that management approach lens. Again, they would sort of be based on the internal view and the internal measurement methods. We wouldn't be looking to do anything that's inconsistent with the current model. So that's just one option we could do. The other thing that we're looking at that may be of more interest is that we could take the current list of segment disclosures and we could require it to be connected up and put into a single table in a single location. Again, as I mentioned, you often have segment disclosures peppered throughout the notes to the financial statements. So this would kind of put it in one spot. And we put an illustration that we used a couple years ago in our agenda consultation that shows the connectivity of what could be required. The other thing that we're thinking about is that you would potentially have a transparency mechanism about what is not regularly reviewed by the CODM. If you're required a table, but you're not required to fill it in, you only have to fill in what is regularly reviewed, there could be a transparency mechanism so that users know, well, this piece of information isn't regularly reviewed by the CODM. That is very powerful in the totality of it. The other option we're thinking about on slide 20 is really we're talking about, well, maybe rather than staying with the current lens of does the CODM review these sort of 15 things, we could actually reinvent how we do the segment disclosures, and we could require the segments the segment disclosure to be not only in a table, but put into the same format as the financial statements, so that if the CODM regularly reviews occupancy costs or rent or salaries, you would have to show that in a way that relates to the lines on the income statement. And that would be your basis, your format for disclosing information about each segment. And if you don't review the totality of SG&A, you'd have that as your unallocated column. So part of the line would be shown segmentally, and part of SG&A would be shown within unallocated. That could be one mechanism. It's a very different way of doing segment disclosures, but that is an option that we could think about within the scope of this project. Again, I think perhaps that comes a little bit more to life when you actually look at the illustrations within the memo, but they're kind of the main alternatives that we're thinking about on the disclosure front and how we could bring the connectivity of the segment results and the reconciliations together. So that was kind of really the last I wanted to talk about of that. If you guys have any questions.
Nick?
Thanks, Lauren. I've got three questions, and they go to paper 27B. And the first one's really thinking about the disclosure of assets by segment. And it seems, looking at that, that potentially you've got three different categories of information here. You've got a measure of profit that seems to be required, whether it's reviewed or not, a measure of assets that's required if available, whether it's reviewed or not, and then others, which are based on whether they're reviewed by the CDOM. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, so the assets one's slightly nuanced in that respect. Okay. And then looking at, on page 23, the table there, which is your smaller table of items, not taking the full financial statements, I guess my question there is, what would determine the line items that went into that table? And actually, by requiring or putting more line or headings into that table in terms of the number of rows, would that necessarily feed through to more of those being given? Or is it, can companies simply hide behind it's not reviewed and so we're not providing the information? Does it actually make a difference by listing more different items?
I mean, the intention of putting it in a table is not to pierce the management approach. So you'd only have to provide amounts segmentally if it's regularly reviewed. That said, we have heard already feedback from our advisory groups that by having a transparency mechanism, some measure to be clear that the CODM doesn't regularly review it, may actually change behavior. We've heard that already from some preparers. And so we are cognizant that there is a behavioral aspect that may change by having a transparency feature to this table.
Okay, understood. And my last question, and I think you mentioned also, Christine, is an opportunity to take costs out of the system. And I wonder if you could speak a little more to what you mean by that. Mm.
I would say that perhaps taking costs out of the system isn't so much relevance for this part of the project.
Okay.
We don't view that this would necessarily take cost out. I think there would be certainly a transitional cost to this, but beyond the requirement to set it up on the transition, ongoing, it would only change as you redo your segments, or you resegment your business, or you change what the CODM regularly reviews.
Although I do think we probably would need to test that theory with outreach with auditors, particularly to understand the incremental audit cost.
Thank you.
Gary?
Yeah, thank you. By the way, Lauren, very good presentation, actually. I like a lot of what's in here and can associate with a lot of it from prior life. Just a few comments and one question is, in your outreach, I would spend time on the difference between what is regularly reviewed by the CODM versus regularly available to the CODM. It's a huge difference because a lot of information is provided. You say, well, if it's provided, it must be used. Well, that's not necessarily true. And thinking of closed books that are written for multiple members of senior management, it's there. I think what the CODM probably spends as much time as they spend reviewing operating results is probably what's more in the MD&A. And look at that as your go-to source for what do they spend their time on. And again, I can have participate in field tests on this, you know, on your side. Or I think it's always a contentious point, what's available, what they might glance at, you know, occasionally you're interested in versus what is regularly reviewed mean. I think that's perhaps a bigger point, the preparer community, than perhaps would be, you know, in any of the constituent communities. I think in your outreach and gross margin, I think just a comment is one is I think the preparers will tell you that's extremely confidential information. At looking at your table on page 23, you know, in segment A, you got a 40% margin, and segment B, you got about a 25% margin. I mean, that's got, I mean, granted, all competitors will have the same phenomena, presumably, if they're all regularly reviewed by the CODM, which is its own problem. But two, that gets used against in bids and pricing. Say, why are you making so much money in my segment? It looks like you're subsidizing somebody else. So I think you should expect pushback or commentary like that. And then likewise, all gross margins are, you know, I'll call it the cost of sales, are not all created equal. The cost of sales and cost of goods sold mean very different things from each other. Cost of goods sold is like inventory relief. Cost of sales is a much more burdened and fully loaded number. And that might very well vary by segment as well, which will challenge your reconciliation to the consolidated statements, perhaps. And then lastly, just a question. I'm on slide 18. Question three. Explain again, require a table regularly reviewed in the format of the entity's financial statements. I didn't say regularly reviewed, but in the format of the entity's financial statements. And I'm thinking back to the old FSP project. Is that sort of, what are you guys thinking on that?
I think that kind of that alternative really comes to life in the illustration in the memo. We have it in page 25. But effectively, what we would do is, from the literature perspective, we wouldn't require these sort of 15 pieces. It would now be a disclosure requirement that would be more or less, it's something we've not really done this before, but it would be a way of saying disclose the information that you regularly reviewed by the CODM on the basis on which it relates to the lines on the income statement and the balance sheet. So you'd use the entity's own income statement and balance sheet as the principal focus. So if they don't review income tax expense by segment, it would be totally shown within the unallocated comment, unallocated column. Similarly with interest income, interest expense, if you don't review those pieces, but you show those as lines on your performance statement, it's all shown within the unallocated section.
And, okay, I understand what you're saying, but I think you'll find at least big companies are going to be all over the place on this.
Yes.
And those who do it, and you say review income taxes by segment, are going to be loath to disclose it if most of their competitors do not look at it that way. So I think you'll deal with the feedback in due course, but I think it's going to be challenging.
Two questions. In terms of segment assets, this is a mandatory disclosure. Is that correct?
It's kind of in the segment asset piece of information is a little bit different. So we require in U.S. GAAP a measure of segment profit and loss and a measure of segment assets. But if you don't regularly review segment assets by segment, you have to disclose that fact. So you don't have to. We don't require you to allocate assets segmentally. But if you don't, you have to disclose that fact explicitly. It operates as a slightly different way to the other segment disclosures.
So it's required if it's reviewed.
That's right.
Even though in your paper and in your text, it looks like it's the same. When I
write
the words, they're all listed there exactly the same. It doesn't work that way in practice.
No, there is a nuance to that.
Sort of an out.
Yeah, there is an out.
And second question, what are your thoughts if you look at your alternative B on page 23 or indeed your other on page 25? If we look at 23... What are your thoughts about how those items line up with company moral reporting? Because often companies have, because this is as reported to the CODM, often measure that the company uses, which in many cases is what is called a non-GAAP measure. It's not necessarily defined by GAAP. So what are your thoughts about how you're going to, if you were to have the table of alternative B, how are you going to require any reconciliation or line up anything between what's in the alternative B and companies' non-GAAP reporting, which, of course, in your case is outside the financial statements?
I'll answer in terms of both of the tables. I guess in terms of the table that's on page 23, that's no different than what is currently required today. So that information, if it's non-GAAP today, would be non-GAAP tomorrow, and it would be reported in that way. So we're not changing that. So I don't think that the table on 23 is terribly affected by non-GAAP reporting. You raise an issue that we are alive to in terms of the other alternative, the financial statement format. That we need to think about a solution to make that work, particularly because one of the things that we haven't finished our issue diagnostics of how we would get to this approach, but one of the things we recognize is that your measure of segment profit or loss may not be shown on as an equivalent measure in the performance statement. So we may actually have to come up with a slightly different modification to get this outcome. We haven't finished it yet.
Lauren, are you saying that, you know, for example, the column that you have is called unallocated or amounts not allocated? You could split that into amounts, you know, not reviewed or not allocated, and another column could be differences between GAAP reported number and how you treat that number in segment information. For example, you're not required to follow topic 606 or 605 for the segments for revenue. Right. But you are in the consolidated, so you could have an adjustment there that says X dollar amount is not in those, but it needs to be in the revenue under 606.
One additional observation, Ann, that I think we may find, I may be wrong, is that I suspect that there is more non-GAAP information that is publicly available than what is potentially used by management. Mm-hmm. And so I think that may be an interesting scenario that could come out, because if it's not based on comp and it's not used by management, but it is then disclosed, it kind of seems strange.
Okay. Thank you, Lauren. I think we have to move on to the next topic on the agenda.